Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everyone. I'm glad we're back. I can't believe we're back already. I've taken a couple days off this week, and I get to jump right in, catch up on a little bit of the Meyer material. First part of the show, we're going to talk about five things today. King Seleuk rebuilding the pyramid, which we kind of covered last show. I'm going to talk a little bit about Billy's life from Askit's perspective. I'm going to read a little and discuss a little bit from Billy's book, The Way to Live. I'm going to talk about creation and finish up with some important concepts from The Might of Thoughts. As you know, Billy Meyer is 81 years old. He lives in Switzerland, about 35 minutes east of Zurich. He grew up even farther north in Switzerland in an area called Bulac. He started having extraterrestrial contacts right around 1943 with a man named Svath. Had those contacts for about 11 years. And then he picked up with some contacts for another 11 years with a woman named Askit from the Tao universe. And Askit and Billy took a trip far below the Great Pyramid, and this was back in right around 1953, and Billy got to see the headquarters of a group called the Giza Intelligences. So this is kind of my lead-in to what we're going to discuss today. And let me cover quickly the Great Pyramid and some of its history. And the Earth's past is very complicated. I dig into it from time to time, and there's such a volume of information presented by Billy's contacts related to history. It's pretty amazing. The Egyptian pyramids, the first pyramids, they were built around 73,000 years ago, and they went through various stages of decay, and they had to be rebuilt at times. Right around 10,000 to 11,000 years ago, about 10,800 to 11,000 years ago, the pyramids were rebuilt and refurbished again. And this was by a certain king named Seleuk, S-A-H-L-U-K, who ordered the alteration and the kind of the revamping of the Great Pyramid of Giza. And just as a side note, the Great Flood that we talk about sometimes was about 100,000 years ago. Now, the time of King Seleuk was about 11,000 years ago. And there was another flood that was coming. Not the one of 100,000 years ago, but the flood that occurred about 11,000 years ago. And King Seleuk had a son named Sarid who could look into the future. And he saw in a dream a great comet that was pulled along by smaller comets. And these comets would collide into the Earth and create terrible roaring sounds. The main comet in this group was called the Destroyer Comet. And I've talked about that before. It used to go through the Lyra Vega system. And this really bizarre comet would penetrate different space-time configurations. If you remember, our universe is roughly elliptical shaped. It has seven counter-rotating rings. In the fourth belt, the fourth ring, are seven different space-time configurations. And this comet somehow could leave its normal space-time configuration, come back, and come into ours. So, and these people, King Sarid and his son, they must have had some kind of technical ability, because They in their time, they forecasted in 3 centuries into the future that these comets would hit the Earth. And, well, one of the big ones didn't actually hit the Earth. But this is very interesting because we don't have the ability to look into the future 3 centuries from now. So in many ways, these people had to be more advanced than us, at least I would think. We can't even agree to get anything done. We can't agree on building that wall down on the southern border. That's just a big source of controversy. Can you imagine the work that it took to revamp the Great Pyramid and everything underneath it? So Sarid, who was the son of King Seleuk, he saw this great comet, which pulled along 7 smaller comets. And some of these comets actually hit the Earth in his dream, and I think it actually did happen that way. So these people had to be advanced. How could they determine that these comets would hit the Earth, and how could they determine when they would hit the Earth? They must have had some way, like a telescope, to be able to see these comets, some way to measure their distance from the Earth, some way to estimate their speed in order to calculate when they would come to the Earth. And if they were three centuries away, my goodness, they must have been viewing them from quite a distance. So a lot of speculation there. Don't know exactly how they did this, but they certainly did it. They were willing to do all that hard work to prepare for the coming dangerous event. I wish our society could have this kind of cooperation. We have a hard enough time to. We're burning 99 million barrels of oil per day, and we're making very little progress on preparing for the time when oil is just too expensive to take out of the ground and there's not that much left. So anyway, one of the, just a little more background about this rebuilding. The pyramid lost a lot of its internal structure and organization, and it was built again under the power of one of the rulers there in Egypt, Cheops, and it was revamped. And the origin, of course, of the Great Pyramid is some extraterrestrials that were from the constellation of Orion, and about 2 stellar ages, an age being about 36,000 years. 2 of these stellar ages is about 73,000 years. And what they did is they recoated the pyramids with lime. And as you know, the Great Pyramid is aligned with the constellation of Orion, or it was, because at that time, Orion was lined up with the pyramids. And according to Meyer information, this is a problem I have with the Meyer information, probably the only problem I have. And I don't get real upset about these things. I just kind of wait and see. Maybe I'll learn more in the future. But they say most of this work was done by 200,000 slaves plus animals. And it took decades, and a lot of these slaves died during the process. Some of it was done with telekinesis. What is telekinesis? This is when you can move things, even a considerable distance, using the mental powers of the human brain alone. And this is something we don't know about yet in our society. These pyramids were built for multiple reasons, and one of them, they were used for shelter during this catastrophe. In Contact Report 70, it talks about the Giza intelligences a little bit. And I mentioned that at the beginning of the show, that the Giza intelligences, Billy got to see their headquarters. Him and Askit went far below the Giza plateau. Deep in the interior of the Earth and deep below the pyramids, they, meaning the Giza intelligences, established themselves securely, and they converted the rooms into these constructions below the pyramid. They also took a spacecraft down there, which makes me think these spacecraft had a way to become no longer solid. They became like an, and this is my speculation, how else would they have got them, you know, thousands of feet below the Earth, unless they created gigantic tunnels, and they never talked about that. So the, let me also just quickly mention a few things here. That the pyramids were covered by a dense layer of limestone, and they had a lime mortar in the outer section, and the pyramids were actually a little higher than they are today. This mortar, this lime mortar, is composed of lime and what they called an aggregate, which was sand mixed with water. The ancient Egyptians used lime mortars. So did Indian traditional structures were built with lime mortar about 4,000 years ago. And I don't know if you remember Mohenjo-Daro, which, you know, is where the, looks like an atomic war took place in the ancient past. And you can see shadows of where peoples were just incinerated from these explosions and left in like rock, is the darkened structure. You have to see it. And they also have glass, green glass. And that's a byproduct of the nuclear process. So Mohenjo-Daro is very interesting, but they had these lime, this lime mortar in Mohenjo-Daro in the Indus Valley in Pakistan, I believe it is. By the way, Pakistan and India are fighting again, which is really a bad thing. They both have nuclear weapons. The pyramids were built under the direction of people from the constellation of Orion. And these pyramid buildings, they had these subterranean rooms that I talked about before. And this is where this extraterrestrial group called the Giza Intelligences were. The original building of the pyramids came from people from the constellation Orion. So, and the Sphinx structure was aligned with the constellation of Leo, where the pyramids were aligned with the constellation of Orion. The, if you go to the Old Testament, what Billy calls the crazy God of the Hebrews, sometimes called Jehovah, or Hen, as his Giza intelligence name was, the Meyer information says he was one of these Giza intelligences, and he was a megalomaniac. And he had these quarters, headquarters deep below the Pyramid of Giza. And he punished the people of Sodom and Gomorrah because they were disobedient to his commands. And he let two small atomic bombs ignite over the cities and leveled everything, killing all the humans and animals. And the third rebuilding of the pyramids occurred about 4,500 years ago. And it involved a lot of work as well. So I didn't realize that. I had to go back and do some studying back over the Meyer stuff. And I think there's more information out there on the Great Pyramid. Maybe we can talk about that on another show another day. Billy's life. Let's talk a little bit about Billy's life from, and this is Things Ask It Told Billy, about what would happen in his life. And I think this occurred on February 7th, 1953. And Ask It said, you will be called something new. In fact, you will be given the name Billy. And this naming conceals within it a great significance and will be very weighty. And I wonder what that significance is. Billy. Edward means guardian. I know that's important. It goes on to say, you will carry this name for all subsequent years, and it will bring you suffering and pain as well as slander, attempted murder, and misconceptions. Billy's been through a lot. from outsiders as well as from your closest fellow humans. And I think that's probably what's hurt him the most, is people closest to him, from critics, those who are envious, know-it-alls, authorities, religions, and false prophets, and so forth. Billy's been a very hated person. It's very funny, the more you're oriented towards truth, it seems like the more of this thing you have to kind of go through. Continues on here, it says, there will be extremely difficult years for you in which you will live and learn in further hells. And Askin uses the word hell a lot in this little writing. This is Askin's Explanations Part 2. It says, hate and foolishness against you will rise in your own family, whereby you will acquaint yourself with the last secrets of the human and his psyche. Now, I wonder if this was close to the time when Billy was writing the book, The Psyche. I'd have to look. I don't know. Maybe it's a little bit before that. It says, someone in your family will betray you. Peace will finally only slowly come for you after a long time, namely when you have already long fulfilled your own mission. Only then will be the signs of peace very slowly for you, because you will no longer take the attacks against your life and your mission seriously. So Billy got to the point where he was just totally neutral about it, which is the way we should handle all of our difficulties. It's a very challenging thing to do sometimes. But the time until then is still very long, and very many hard and wild events will roll over you, it says. The name Billy intended for you will become significant worldwide. Now, Billy is known worldwide. That's quite interesting. Many different countries. I think people all over the world are starting to a degree to recognize the wisdom of his teachings. And suffering as well as need and pain will threaten to drown you. But manage yourself in accordance with your reason and in accordance with your understanding, because these alone will guarantee your life. So 8 months after your accident, this is the accident where he lost his left arm. I think it was his left arm. You will marry under very difficult circumstances after you meet your future wife at Christmas time in 1965. So I'm maybe a little bit off on my times in regard to Billy's life. The circumstances of your acquaintanceship up to the marriage in Corinth in Greece will be defined by extraordinarily evil intrigues and evil entanglements from your bride's side of the family, whereby you will be forced to kidnap your bride, who furthermore will be only 17 years old. Billy had a lot of troubles from the woman he married. I think that was part of the plan, though. He had to go through that. It says here, do not think, however, that after the wedding you will have gotten all your problems behind you, because the actual difficulties, first starting after that, will continue during all the coming years. In the first 10 years of your marriage, you'll produce 3 children to whom you will give very old names. So Billy's children were named, the girl was Gilgamesh. One of the boys was called Atlantis Socrates. Excuse me. And there was one called Methuselah. And it says here, no more children will originate from your marriage. And isn't that crazy? Here's an extraterrestrial talking to Billy, telling him about the future, how many children he's going to have, what their names are going to be, what kind of difficulties he's going to face. So it's like his whole life has been planned out. You know, it would be tempting almost to try to deviate from that and see what would happen. It'd probably be bad stuff. So probably he knew better than to do that. So also, the birth of your children will bring you no peace, and so the path of your learning will not have ended. And only in 1995 will your path first begin to free themselves extremely slowly from the thorns. So maybe by this time Billy's writing his books and he's getting established. But until then, you'll be completely left to your own resources during all the years And during this time also, receive some further instructions or portions of teachings from us and from other intelligences. This is then your last and most burdensome course of learning, which you alone must finish. You must, under all circumstances, withstand all these very difficult times, even if you will often not feel like it. Now, this is very interesting. In the year 1975, if the great danger of a universal catastrophe is averted, at the start of the year, as I have already explained to you, another extraterrestrial life form, which says it's from the Pleiades, it's not really from the Pleiades, will make contact with you, after which you are then to begin to fulfill your mission. This was Semyase that Billy would meet with in 1975. I don't know if I have any information about her up right now. Semyase would send her ship. She would fly her ship into Shmidruti there in beautiful areas where Billy lived, and Billy and her would speak. Semyase was 344 years old at this time, a pretty woman with fair skin, sparkling eyes, and light blonde hair. But she had a great accident, and Billy's contacts with her got cut a little short. And we've talked about that before, and mentioned some of the difficulties that these extraterrestrials have with being around Earth humans, because our thoughts are so negative and so erratic. It causes what you might call a destructive interference, where these people lose control of their bodies. And she fell. Semyase actually fell when one of the other group members came into a room where Billy and her were talking. So, but then, let me continue here. It says, work then, however, with all possible means of truth and righteousness available to you in order to fulfill your mission and do it in justice. In this time, you will also come into contact once again with the biggest European UFO study community, which should make an effort to spread information about your doings. From this point, you will be invited to a congress, but this will be a very great knockout for you. The organizers will not want to come to terms with the truth because they are very strongly based through religious sectarianism. Now, let me tell you a little bit about this. And I think this is one of the reasons why Billy's contacts are not more widely known, because Billy has a more, what I would call, and finally after all these years of studying it, a more accurate understanding of our universe and a more accurate understanding of the life and times of Emmanuel, or the person that we call Jesus today. So, and maybe we'll get into a little bit of that. I'm not sure if we will or not, but Billy's written over 40 books, and they were written originally in German. And then someone will come along, and there are a lot of unsung heroes, like Vivian Leigh and Dyson Divine will come along, and they will translate one of these books so people like me can read these books and then pass this information on to you. One of the people that Billy works with is a woman named Bernadette Brand. And she wrote a book about Nocodemian, which was one of Billy's previous personalities as a teacher. But Bernadette Brand wrote a little interesting bit in the beginning of this book called The Way to Live, The Art zu Leben. And she said, to the truly searching one and to the knowing one, the book is not only a means of learning, rather also a source of comfort and edification, the seed of joy, and the root of true humaneness and humanity. And I want to say this just from my own experience of going back to these books over and over again over the years. They are for me a sense of comfort as well. And I really have been so thankful to have the time to do a couple days in a row of the Meyer information, because it gives me a sense of comfort to read this information, to study and then share this information with you. But let me continue here with what Bernadette says. She says, rather a source of comfort and the edification, the seed of joy, and the root of true humaneness and humanity. From it, he or she draws knowledge that he or she is never lonely, rather is always part of an unending whole, which at all times and lives and pulses, and which also weaves through his or her entire life and equalizes it, in which he or she finally finds security, peace, love, freedom, harmony, and progress. That's at the beginning of the Way to Live book. And one of the concepts is called fulfilling your duty to yourself, something that I am striving to get better at. Not as good as I should be, not as good as I'd like to be. The German word for duties is Pflichten, and you can look that up for yourself at a website called www.dict.cc. So we're talking about fulfilling a duty to yourself. So you have certain duties. If a human wants to live truly, honestly, and fairly, then he or she must consider and understand the fulfillment of the duties to himself or herself is constantly and always the most important and foremost. And when I study the Meyer information, I do it in a lot of ways. I mean, I have this Chrome plug-in that will read the notes that I've taken and put online out at exopoliticsohio.us. That's one way to study. You can also listen to Billy's stuff on YouTube. You can read his books, which is a good way to do it as well. Probably one of the best ways. So what does it mean to fulfill your duty to yourself? Exercise, grooming, this is really important. It's related to your life power, your Lebenskraft, too. The more you fulfill your duty to yourself, I think it enhances your life power. Part of your fulfilling your duty to yourself is having right thinking, being honest and benevolent. Don't turn your back on yourself. You shouldn't be having negative thoughts about yourself in any way, shape, or form. You want to be benevolent, kind-hearted, good-natured, compassionate, not only to others but to yourself. So no self-chastisement, no self-abuse, no feelings of inferiority, no bitterness. Be gentle to yourself. And also, no flattery. Don't have any flattery to yourself. Care for your health. Take a shower. Put on some clothes. Brush your teeth. Challenge your body and your mind. Another thing here, and I always have to remember this, don't devote yourself to your passions, to your lust, to your vices, and to your addictions. Those lead you down self-destruction. Use your intelligence, your logic, or if you don't use your intelligence and your logic, you will have no enjoyment in the fulfillment of your responsibility. Do not oppress yourself through self-chastisement or self-abuse, or through self-disregard. For that matter, you know, self-disregard is, you're not practicing hygiene, you're not eating, you're not sleeping right. Don't disregard yourself. Don't have feelings of inferiority. Don't be bitter. Don't flatter yourself either. Don't neglect yourself. That's on page 30. I like to come back into these books over and over again. And they constantly, sometimes if you say it out loud too, it seems to have a little more oomph to it. Some of this stuff, if you can memorize it. I've memorized a lot from the Might of Thoughts, and it helps me a lot. So let me read just a little bit here. Therefore, be constantly on guard, because again and again in the life there arise situations and moments which quite especially require of you that you remain true to yourself and to your inner friend. That's you. You are your best friend. Don't depend on that. Don't try to use Facebook to be your best friend. You don't even depend on your family and your friends and your pets. You have to be your true inner friend. These are situations and moments which quite especially require that you do not abandon yourself, even when everyone else abandons you. These are the situation and moments in which your own dealings with yourself, your dealings with your own I, are the only ones which are still comforting, and the only valuable ones which not only hold you above the water, rather which enable you to fight for the life and the continuing of the life. But just consider what would be become of you if you failed in such moments. If you would not live in peace with yourself, whereby you would also remain denied all comfort and all help from the side of your feelings and thoughts, from the side of your consciousness. Wow, this is something worth memorizing. These are the situations and moments in which your own dealings with yourself and your dealings with your own I are the only ones which are still comforting, and the valuable ones which not only hold you above water, rather which enable you to fight for life and for the continuation of life. So, you know, and that's what it comes down to a lot with this Meyer information. It really is the means for fighting for your life. And you will find as time goes on, if you stay with this information, that you can really depend on it. It's different than religion, because you will find our religions are based on misunderstandings, all of them. So you'll have the real overcoming of the negative. Slowly the whole life is mastered. The entire attentiveness of your mind is steered away from the burdens and attached to what is neutral. This is the way to take your mind, and you want to focus on the neutral positive. Others will respect you only when you give yourself sufficient respect. Fulfill your duty to yourself. Openly announce the sublimity of your I and your fulfillment of your duty to yourself and your own deity. Express the actuality of your sublime I open and freely. You know, this is a book I probably need to spend more time in the more I think about it. This is a very, very important book. If you devote yourself to your passions on your vices and addictions, you will be like one who runs through the smoldering desert, dying of thirst. I remember that passage. So anyway, this is called The Way to Live, The Art to Live. It's one of Billy's books, a very important book. I'm going to move on. That's a book we ought to come back to. I want to come back to the notion of creation. You know, people will sometimes ask, do you believe in God? And Boy, that's a loaded question, isn't it? So let me explain what the Meyer information teaches and what makes sense to me. First of all, what is creation? People have the term God in their mind. Our universe has a consciousness and intelligence. There really isn't a persona up there like a Heavenly Father or a Mother Nature. Why? Let me prove it to you. A father will never let his child run out into traffic and get killed. You know, the father is going to interfere with the free will of the child. He has to, because the child will otherwise hurt himself and kill himself. Now, it doesn't work that way in the real world. And what I'm trying to say is the power in our universe is not a father. If you jump off the cliff, you're going to splat. It's not going to step in and violate your free will. There's no Heavenly Father in the way that the religions have taught. Because all of that is based on misunderstanding that we had in the ancient past. And now our whole development is gone off skew. We have all of these, you know, the mainstream religions are cults, really. Catholicism, Christianity, Islam. Maybe Islam is the worst in many respects. Mormonism, you name them all. Hindu, I don't. So, we have a creation, the universe, which is roughly elliptical shape, like an egg. If you would cut it in half and look inside, you'd see a cross section. Circles within circles, kind of like a tree. There are seven layers. The fourth layer is the material belt. So we have this double helix, this egg-shaped configuration. And the universe is expanding. You've heard of the Big Bang. Well, our universe is still expanding. It's 46 trillion years old. And creation, it has something called the universal gemut. The gemut controls the thoughts and feelings of the spiritual consciousness in the human. Every human has a gemut. The universe has one as well. So that's the controlling factor of your spiritual consciousness. Your material consciousness has a psyche that controls your thoughts and feelings. Now creation, you can think of creation really as everything. The spirit form that you have in your superior colliculus in the middle of your brain is a fragment of the creation. So there's a oneness to all life. And creation, the universe, is evolving. It's developing. Just like all life within the universe is evolving and developing. The notion of God is this perfect being that doesn't evolve, doesn't change. That's an imaginary thing, a misunderstanding. Creation has development and an evolutionary process just like the rest of us. And creation goes through these phases. Right now, creation will expand, continue to expand for 155 trillion years, and then it will go through its contraction phase, and eventually it goes dormant. Now, the purpose of the human being is to evolve his consciousness. That's why we come back in these reincarnations. Our spirit form comes back over and over and over again. Each human being, each of your personalities is different. You never come back as the same human being you were. So it's not the traditional point of view in terms of reincarnation. What's coming back is your spirit form. Now, in your subconscious is all the wisdom of your previous lifetimes. In your spirit form, all the wisdom of your previous lifetime. And all the events in your lifetime are also stored in something called universal storage banks. In terms of how creation thinks, and I use that term maybe not so accurately, because thinking is, you know, creation is a super intelligence. And I don't want to launch off into that. I don't know if I have enough information there, but I don't think creation thinks in the sense that we human beings do, especially in terms of feelings. You know, our thoughts produce feelings, and the feelings grow out of the thoughts, and the feelings take time to manifest and this sort of thing. And we as humans, we also have these emotions, which sometimes will rage out of control. And I'm not so sure that creation has emotions or feelings, maybe feelings, but it radiates love. But it's not a personality like us. It doesn't have a personality. It's pure spirit energy. In some ways, it's incomprehensible for us. We have a hard time really wrapping our mind around it. Its wisdom is immeasurable. Its knowledge, its love, and harmony are immeasurable. Its solace, its guidance, its discipline, creation is direction. It's, in many ways, it has its own perfection, even though it's still evolving. Creation is the path of life. It is nature. It is consciousness. And in our universe, it's truly everywhere. Now, all the matter in our 3D universe that we live in moves along a spiral of oscillating pulses of energy. And this is controlled by time. So time, you could think of a spiral. And spiritual energy is not connected to the path. Okay. I don't want to really comment too much on that at this point. It's going to take a little more study, I think, for me to really get my mind around that. But it's very interesting that all the matter in our three-dimensional universe, it moves along this spiral of oscillating pulses of energy, which are controlled by time. No, I don't understand all that yet. That's a very advanced concept. So time is very, very interesting, especially when related to creation, because the time spans are so immense that it's hard for us to imagine, for example, that our universe started 46 trillion years ago. That's much older than what our scientists understand. Because matter only lasts about 40 to 45 billion years. But our universe is not mostly matter. Our universe has a colossal size, and its spiral egg shape complicates everything even more. We have also a parallel universe called the Tao universe. It's our sister universe. That's where Askit comes from. So that was just a quick overview of the material universe. And creation is not God. There is really no God in the sense that the religions teach. Creation is our universe, which has a consciousness that is always neutral positive and always striving all the time. And it's always striving to evolve. And striving is so critical striving is literally the most important thing we do. And your happiness depends on your willingness to work, your willingness to strive. And always try to strive with a neutral, positive, harmonious attitude. And if you're just gritting your teeth and you're struggling, you're not doing it right, because that will bring to you frustration, and it will inhibit your striving. Always be relaxed while you're striving. And while you're striving, you will have what's called delectation, satisfaction, happiness. If you're fulfilling the law of harmony, that's the other creational law. So striving creates the life right up to the being. Striving means delectation in a form which is fulfilling and progressive. Now, you may have to go through times in your life where your striving is so intense, you don't even think that you can handle it. Those are not, in my opinion, the funnest times, but you may have to go through that. I've had to go through that. But if you're without striving in your life, then that means an affliction that you're having. It means inhibited life, inhibited evolution. You're stagnant. You will lose your hope. You'll have grief. You'll have confusion, irrationality, joylessness, cognitionless. You will have no peace. All of this comes when you throw your striving to the side. And this is why, you know, people come addicted to alcohol. They self-destruct. Addicted to drugs, they self-destruct, because it interferes with the striving. Addicted to sex, they self-destruct. Addicted to gambling, you're going to self-destruct. Addicted to food, you're going to self-destruct. Because all of these addictions, they interfere with the striving. The striving always has to be the first priority. And what is striving? Well, it can be reading The Way to Live, the book Way to Live, like I was just reading. Striving can mean cleaning out your kitty litter, you know, cleaning your garage, working out, taking a shower, doing your day job, whatever that happens to be. Remember, the meaning, the purpose of your life is the evolution of your consciousness. That's why we're here. So whatever you're doing, take some time for it to evolve your consciousness. Take the time to do that. Now, in the last few minutes of our program, I think we may have 15 minutes or so, I want to go back to something that is critical to your daily life. And that is maintaining this neutral positive attitude. And you can have negative inclusions, but tell yourself you're confident, you're optimistic, you're enthusiastic, I'm cheerful, I'm relaxed. This is what I tell myself. I am the master of my own destiny. I'm the forger of my own fortune. I create my own good luck. I do not allow my thoughts to drift on the ocean of life. I steer my thoughts like a captain steers his ship. I nurture my thoughts. I strengthen my thoughts. I organize my thoughts. I clarify my thoughts. It is the nature of the thoughts that by their might alone, every conceivable thing can come to fruition. So when you're telling yourself these things, you're affecting your consciousness in a positive way. And it's also healthy occasionally to throw in a negative inclusion. Like you could say, my consciousness is like a garden, but life throws me some challenges at times. You can say to yourself, every thought that is enlivened by might and power must as a cause also bring a quite certain effect. And this effect of the thought is directly proportional to its might and power. So the negative and the positive are two forces that belong together because they depend on one another, and they should never be separated. When you try, and we all do it, we have something that's really bothering us, and we're going to get that out of our life. Have you ever thought that maybe this negative thing is supposed to be there? You know, Billy explains, and I was reading it. I can't remember which book. Probably in the Mind of Thoughts, I guess. Is that there's always a negative that interferes with your evolution, and it's supposed to be there. So the negative and the positive are two forces that belong together because they depend on one another and they should never be separated. As a rule, suffering is an effect of some form of wrong thinking. And incidents of suffering in the life are indicators that the law of harmony has been broken and disregarded. So these are just some principles discussed from about page 200, probably to about page 360-something, in the book called Macht der Gedanken, The Might of the Thoughts. So the point of all this is to make your thoughts neutral positive. And I mentioned that it's sometimes good to have a negative inclusion. So if you say, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm enthusiastic, but I realize that life has its difficulties, then you really become neutral positive. But we have so many negative thoughts that really just rage out of us. One of the things you've got to do is build up a confidence for all of your future. You know, when you wake up in the morning, at least I do sometimes, and you feel this negative cloud, especially in the winter, you know, you wake up and, my God, it snowed again last night, and it's dark, and there's snow everywhere. You have to start to correct your feeling. Maintain the correctness of your thoughts and your feelings, as well as your work, of course, and your actions. In every respect, and also use your consciousness, because your consciousness has a tremendous power. Have a true confidence in yourself. And don't allow your confidence to be shaken by anything. This is exactly what Svoth told Billy when he would land his strange silvery pear-shaped craft in Bulak, Switzerland in 1943, 44, 45. And for the next 11 years, as Billy was getting this mentorship from Svoth, remember Svoth, Billy's first extraterrestrial contact, Billy's first face-to-face contact with a Plejaren. And Svoth had some very, very interesting things to say about Billy's lives. Let me read a little bit about what Svoth said here. He says, the cause for the argumentation leads back to determination which lie very far back in your past, and according to which, during the time of your present life, you are fitted into a certain task determined by yourself, as was the case repeatedly in your spiritual line of reincarnations, in former lives and other personalities and bodies. In order to fulfill the mission of a proclaimer and to bring to the whole of humanity peace, love, truth, freedom, and unity, as well as open, unencrypted knowledge of spiritual matters which pertain to the creational laws as well as wisdom. Because of your self-determination, which far precedes the present, you have entered life as a proclaimer of the truthful creational laws and recommendations. And we talked about those last show, the creational natural laws. The first is love, effective love, brotherly love, not romantic love. The second is striving, which we talked about today, working, evolving your consciousness. Your striving brings your sense of life, your happiness. If you neglect your striving, you will experience unhappiness. The third law is the law of harmony, which means your thoughts should be neutral, positive, in order to have good circumstances in your life. You need to have neutral, positive thoughts, which generate neutral, positive feelings, and then neutral, good circumstances in your life. Then, eventually, you learn that every thought is enlivened by might and power. And the might and power of the thoughts are directly proportional. The effect you get from your thoughts, is directly proportional to their might and power. And this also deals with your feelings that you have with thoughts. And if you continue to think this way, have these powerful thoughts, neutral, positive, your consciousness will be like a garden. You'll have good feelings. You'll have good habits. Good circumstances come into your life. This is, I believe it's called the law of provision. And there's the law of reincarnation, which says you're going to reincarnate. Your spirit form is going to come back, and you're going to live many, many lives. 40 to 60 million lives in a physical body, 40 to 60 million years, not lives, 40 to 60 million years in a physical body, and then eventually you'll have a half physical, half spiritual body, and eventually you'll be living as a pure spirit form again, and you'll go up through these seven layers. It takes about 2.5 billion years, and eventually you'll merge back with creation, and your consciousness will be completely, your spiritual consciousness will be completely conscious for the first time as you break into this Pitali level, and you're aware not only of yourself, but the entire universe, and that's where we merge back with creation. At least that's what the Meyer information explains. So I hope you enjoyed this show. As always, I enjoy doing them. And we've been talking about the teachings of Edward Albert Meyer. We discussed a little bit about rebuilding the pyramids. Was rebuilt like three times, I believe. King Seleuk and his ability to look into the future. We talked about Billy's life from Ascot, what Ascot told him would happen in his life. We also talked about the book, The Way to Live, the book, The Might of Thoughts, and we talked about creation a little bit. Have a great day. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Thank you very much. Have a good day.